Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How you doing? Welcome to Tuesday. Glad you're here. Thanks for tuning in. How's Barack Obama doing? Is he? Where is he tonight, Kathy? Anybody have any? Do you know where he is? Huh? No.
Actually, yeah. I think he's in Israel.
He's in Israel? Is he going to chat with the Palestinians?
I heard part of his press conference today, and unfortunately we will not be bringing any of that to you because our power was out until just a few minutes ago.
That's very true. I'll tell you, here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, which is the absolute domain of the Southern Company, which happens to be one of the largest commercial polluters in terms of befouling the atmosphere in the history of humankind, the Southern Company, which owns Georgia Power, has made it known through their actions that any time there is even a brief but violent thunderstorm, as we had this afternoon or early this evening, the power will go out. But the Southern Company's profits continue to rise. The Southern Company does not reinvest in infrastructure. It is now looking to start building new nuclear power plants. And it just goes on and on. The Southern Company, one of the corporate entities that is bringing to the globe global heating. So we have to deal with it here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. As Kathy said, we just did have power restored about 30 minutes ago.
So I heard some of his press conference in the car today on Sirius Satellite Radio. And he was talking, some snotty reporter apparently asked him, was being critical about why he was refusing to discuss the Israel-Palestinian
conflict. That was Terry Moran, who is just making a total ass of himself.
And Barack responded that he was actually reserving comment on that portion of Middle Eastern policy because he hadn't been there yet, and he was traveling there tomorrow and would have something to say then.
Okay. Well, then I guess that kind of guarantees...
Slap!
Guarantees that we'll have some conversation, some of this press conference conversation, whatever you want to call it, on tomorrow's program. New York Times, I don't know if you saw this, but this past weekend, the Times reported that, in their words, felons are asking President Bush for pardons and commutations at historic levels as he nears his final months in office, a time when many other presidents have granted a flurry of clemency requests, end quote. The Times noted that despite commuting Scooter Libby's prison sentence, applicants, quote, should not, or applicants should expect to be disappointed, end quote, because Bush, quote, has made little use of his clemency power, end quote, compared to past presidents. Yeah, Bush, I don't think Bush understands what clemency is. He doesn't understand the word, and he doesn't understand the objective of using clemency. So there will be a lot of people who are going to be terribly disappointed with George W. Bush. And one area, though, of potential felons that is not being overlooked is that area where any illegal activity involving the Bush crime family's counterterrorism programs are concerned. Whether it has been illegal invasion of privacy, violations of the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the First Amendment, torture, murder, those sorts of crimes committed in the name of the Bush crime family is causing several members of the conservative legal community, according to the New York Times, in Washington, D.C., to urge Bush to issue preemptive pardons to those who were involved in murder and torture and kidnapping and rape and rendition. Preemptive pardons. So as to, in the Times' words, quote, not to be exposed even to the risk of an investigation and expensive legal bills, end quote. Do you get this? Preemptive pardons For people who, without argument, have committed the worst crimes against the U.S. Constitution in our history. Yes, I know that habeas corpus was suspended during the Civil War and during the internment of Japanese Americans in World War II. And yes, I know that the United States Supreme Court overturned the suspension of habeas corpus during the Civil War, and someone will have to refresh me about what happened with Roosevelt's use of it, because I'm not sure. But there has not been a criminal enterprise in charge of this country to the extent of the Bush crime family ever in our history. We are not talking about only the suspension of constitutional rights or civil rights or human rights, as bad as those suspensions are. We are talking about some of the most egregious crimes that the state can commit against individuals. Deprivation of freedom. Suspension of habeas corpus, or whatever you want to call it. Refusing someone jailed the right to confront the accuser, the right to see what evidence the state has that has resulted in their imprisonment. That is done in dictatorships. That is done in Soviet Russia. It was done in Nazi Germany. It is done in various countries around the world now that lift their legs and urinate on the idea of the rule of law. Now, among these people now is the Bush crime family, among these regimes. So, a conservative legal community. No, it is not conservative, and it is not a legal community. They are rat bastard thugs, are urging Bush to issue these preemptive pardons. The Times says, quote, such a pardon would reduce the risk that a future administration might undertake a criminal investigation of operatives or policymakers involved in programs that administration lawyers have said were legal, but that critics say violated laws regarding torture and surveillance. Critics say. How about constitutional scholars say? How about human rights activists say? How about real legal experts say? Why does the Times refer to them as critics? Critics of the Bush crime family's crimes against anyone who comes within range of their scopes. Huh? Some legal analysts said Mr. Bush might be reluctant to issue these pardons because, well, you know, they could be construed as an implicit admission of guilt. Oh, no, really? Oh, well, then that just puts George Bush's testicles in a vice, doesn't it, huh? Damned if you do, squeeze out. Damned if you don't, squeeze out. What a terrible place to be in, right, George? Victoria Tensing, who was a Justice Department counterterrorism official in the Reagan administration, remember her, said, quote, the president should preempt any long-term investigations. If we don't protect these people who are proceeding in good faith, no one will ever take chances, end quote. Victoria Tensing should be renditioned to, oh, I don't know, pick one. I know, Egypt. Where she should be subjected to the same sorts of questioning techniques used against people we have renditioned to, oh, I don't know, say Egypt. Victoria Tensing is another totalitarian thug whose raison d'etre is to destroy representative government.
Coming. No American will be allowed to torture another human being anywhere in the world.
How does he get away with it? Well, maybe not forever. Anyway, Victoria Tenzing, who was in the Reagan Justice Department, I know that's a contradiction in terms, Reagan Justice Department. But you may remember her. She was a person who was all over cable television in 1999, working desperately for the impeachment of Bill Clinton for lying about his oral sex escapade with Monica Lewinsky. Victoria Tenzing made her presence known every chance she could get. She was one of those types who would just start talking over someone else if she didn't agree with what they had to say. A woman who, if you look up the word obnoxious in the dictionary, there will be her picture. But Ms. Tenzing says that Bush should preempt any long-term investigations by issuing preemptive pardons. She says if we don't protect these people who are proceeding in good faith, no one will ever take chances. Take chances of what, Ms. Tenzing? Take chances at once again rupturing the rule of law in this country, ripping it to goddamn pieces and replacing it with the kind of totalitarian government that you subscribe to? Where do these people come from? What under what rocks and boards in old wood piles do these slime crawl out from under? It's unbelievable. Stuart Taylor, Jr., a constitutional law fellow at the Brookings Institution, agrees with Victoria Tenzing, saying in a recent Newsweek column that investigations into the Bush administration's, quote, high-level war crimes, his words, high-level war crimes are a bad idea. His words, bad idea. And instead, he calls for a truth commission. His words, truth commission. The Brookings Institution is ostensibly a liberal think tank. Stuart Taylor Jr. is ostensibly a liberal constitutional law fellow. And he says that investigations into the Bush administration's, his words, high-level, quote, war crimes, end quote, are a bad idea, instead calls for a truth commission. He says the following, quote, a criminal investigation would only hinder efforts to determine the truth and preclude any apologies. Well, I'll be a son of a bitch, Stuart. Really? So if I go kill somebody at dawn tomorrow, just randomly pick someone out, if the cops come and investigate why I shot this person in cold blood, your position is that that investigation would only hinder efforts to determine the truth of the killing I committed, you psychopathic bastard. You see, here's another example. Another example of how the right wing is not the exclusive nesting place of maniacs. So is the left wing. But I digress. Stuart Taylor says the criminal investigation would only hinder efforts to determine the truth and preclude any apologies. It would spur those who know the most to take the fifth. Any prosecution would also touch off years of partisan warfare. Okay, Stuart, I get it. Question, why did we prosecute the Nazi high command and the German businessmen who provided material support to the Nazi high command? Another question. Why did we prosecute the Japanese high command and the Japanese businessmen who provided material support to that command? Why did we do that stuff, Stuart? Huh? Was it a joke? Was it a goddamn joke? Is that what it was? Apparently. He goes on to say, absent pardons, pressure to go after GOP, quote, war criminals, end quote, would make it very hard to unite Americans of all stripes behind solutions to the many economic and social challenges facing the country, end quote. Well, there you have it, you see. There you have it. The let the rot continue that now exists at the very core of this republic. Let the rot continue. And you know what happens when you don't remove the rot, whether it's at the core of an apple or a cancer eating away at your guts? You know what happens, don't you? Yes, you do. Eventually, it rots the entire apple or kills the victim. What the hell is Stuart Taylor Jr. talking about? Let the rot continue. Because, you know, we have things to do. We have economic challenges facing the country. You know, the price of oil and gasoline and electricity and eggs. God damn it, have you seen the price of eggs lately? So let the rot, the corruption, the neo-Nazism, the totalitarianism that sits right now at the very heart of this republic, let it continue. Even liberals are saying this. Now, once again, truth seeker, do you think Barack Obama, when he becomes president, is going to pursue this war criminal in the White House? Huh?
I'm in the air, Guantanamo. I heard the girls are sweeter there. Meet me at Guantanamo. We'll have a water board to share. Meet me at Guantanamo. Where does the best help get around? Meet me, my friend, in Guantanamo. Meet me, my friend.
And regarding the civil liberties, by monitoring the program on a regular basis, by having the folks at NASA, the legal team, as well as the Inspector General, monitor the program, and we're briefing Congress.
Well, I guess that makes it all okay. NASA. All right, here's my answer about Japanese internment. Reg writes in, FDR didn't bother to suspend habeas corpus. A habeas corpus writ was filed by one of the detainees early in the war, and the ruling says he was wrongfully detained came at the end of the war, after the camps were closed. The American Heritage website says, quote, no evidence has been found of any espionage or sabotage by Japanese Americans at Pearl Harbor or after. Nevertheless, without a suspension of the writ of habeas corpus or the declaration of martial law, more than 100,000 Japanese Americans would languish under armed guards in 10 bleak relocation centers until as late as 1946, having committed no crime other than being of the wrong race. So, there was no suspension, even when the United States territory was attacked, when we were engaged in an all-out global conflict with fascists on both sides of the planet, so to speak, still habeas corpus was not suspended. But let this son of a bitch in the White House and his puppet master decide that detainees so-called at Guantanamo or in Kandahar or Abu Ghraib or Poland or Czechoslovakia or Egypt or Syria or wherever they have been sent, wherever the secret detention or rendition sites are, those people shall have no rights of habeas corpus. Now, this is interesting, and I want you to listen to this. Gordon writes, Mike, Scott Horton, a legal scholar who wrote extensively about the wrongful prosecution of Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, also provides real legal analysis of the actions of the Bush-Cheney administration. In the following, Horton exposes a very interesting comparison of the German General Staff's legal memorandum, which sought to avoid the Geneva Convention of 1929 and the Hague Convention of 1907, with eerily similar conclusions drafted by John Yoo for the Bush crime family. If you substitute Axis of Evil, or Middle East, for the German term, the Eastern Front, and substitute the United States for Nazis or Germany, then the following mirrors accurately what we've been hearing from the Bush crime family and their allies in the so-called media for nearly 7 years. Now listen to this. This is a legal memoranda from the German General Staff, written, I believe, in the 30s and probably early 40s. Listen to this. One, particularly on the Eastern Front, the conflict was a non-conventional sort of warfare being waged against a, quote, barbaric, end quote, enemy, which engaged in, quote, terrorist, end quote, practices, and which itself did not observe the law of armed conflict. Let me digress. We know what the Eastern Front was, don't we? It was the Soviet Union. Two, individual combatants who engaged in, quote, terrorist practices, end quote, or who fought in military formations engaged in such practices, were not entitled to protections under international humanitarian law, and the adjudicatory provisions of the Geneva Conventions could therefore be avoided together with the substantive protections. Three, the Geneva and Hague Conventions were, quote, obsolete, end quote, and ill-suited to the sort of ideologically driven warfare in which the Nazis were engaged on the Eastern Front, though they might have limited application with respect to the Western Allies. Four, application of the Geneva Conventions was not in the enlightened self-interest of Germany, because its enemies would not reciprocate such conduct by treating German prisoners in a humane fashion. I digress. German prisoners who were captured and sent to the United States and put in POW camps all over the South were treated not just humanely, but were treated almost as though they were the honored guests of the American people. In fact, the Germans in the detention camps, the German soldiers in the southern detention camps, were treated with more courtesy and dignity and deference than American soldiers who happened to be black. Number five. Construction of international law should be driven in the first instance by a clear understanding of the national interests as determined by the executive. To this end, niggling, hyper-technical interpretations of the Geneva Conventions that disregard the plain text, international practice, and even Germany's prior practice in order to justify their non-application were entirely appropriate. What does number five mean? It means that the law is an ass. It means disregard the law. It means the niggling, hyper-technical debate back and forth about whether to murder or torture or set up death camps or exterminate 6 million Jews is superfluous to the discussion about the Third Reich. Is that clear? Number six. In any event, the rules of international law were subordinated to the military interests of the German state and to the law as determined and stated by the German Führer. Scott Horton then observes, quote, the similarity between these rationalizations and those offered by John Yoo in his hitherto unpublished Justice Department memoranda and books and articles is staggering. The similarity is staggering. It is, of course, possible that John Yoo came upon all of this on his own, like a scholar laboring in some parallel universe unaware of the work of others. Possible, but not probable. The point being, at the very end, that John Yoo and Dick Cheney and Alberto Gonzalez and John Ashcroft, on and on and on, Chertoff, you know their names, didn't borrow, but rather transcribed from the memoranda issued by the German High Command, justifying the complete avoidance of what few rules of armed conflict existed in the 30s, took from those memoranda and applied them to the United States of America in the 21st century. Do you understand this? So, you know, once again, to the people who, and you know who you are, who occasionally, it's kind of dropped off here in the past couple of years, but the people who used to send emails telling me that it was becoming very, very tiresome, Mike, your constant comparisons of the Bush administration to the Nazi high command. Oh, for Christ's sake, can't you come up with anything original? And the answer to that was always, no. How, I mean, come up with something original. When it was obvious, on its face, where the Bush crime family stole its parameters, its definitions, its rules and regulations, its justifications. How can anybody not get that? Why has this cowardly, filthy media that we have in this country not pointed this out? These are Nazi bastards. There's no argument here. Because they haven't set up death camps and started marching Muslims into gas chambers does not mean they're not equal in their intent of the Nazis. Why is that reality not so blatant that the editorial writers of the Times or the Post or wherever don't state categorically we are living, yes, indeed, in a parallel universe, a universe that parallels the Nazis after all the work by the winners of World War II that went into the prosecution and the execution at Nuremberg. After all the work that went into the prosecution and the execution in Tokyo. After all of that, why is there no absolute outrage? Why is Nancy Pelosi saying impeachment is off the table? What in the hell has happened?
The world is riddled with maggots. The maggots are getting fat. They're making a tasty meal of all the bosses and bureaucrats. They're taking over the boardrooms and they're fat and full of pride. And they all came out of the woodwork on the day the Nazi died. So if you meet with these historians, I'll tell you what to say. Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never rest again until every Nazi dies.
Pulling the troops out would send a terrible signal to the enemy. You know, the United States is weak.
Ten before the hour. God, that's creepy music. What is it, from The Sound of Music? What's it from? Huh?
Life is a cabaret.
Oh, it's from Cabaret. Oh, that's right, where the young German soldiers stood in the cabaret and started singing, right? Yeah. God, we need to see that movie again.
Actually, they were at an outdoor restaurant.
Oh, were they?
Yeah,
oh.
But it freaked everybody out.
Mm-hmm. Regarding Stuart Taylor's comments about investigations into the Bush administration's high-level war crimes being a bad idea, and his statement that such investigations would make it very hard to unite Americans of all stripes behind solutions to the many economic challenges facing the country. Prairie 2 writes, Mike, the excuse that we can't go after the criminals because of our need to solve our problems with the economy sounds like a not-so-subtle threat. Go after the corporate fascists, and they'll crash the economy. After all, why would those two things have anything to do with one another otherwise? Yeah, how's come nobody talked about crashing the economy when they went after Bill Clinton? You see, that's why these arguments by liberal think tank mouthpieces like Stuart Taylor stink of the filth of right-wing pollution. Nobody stopped the impeachment of and trial of Bill Clinton, and the world went on, didn't it? But Dick Cheney and George Bush and the rest of these thugs, well, we have more important things to do. No, we don't. And mark my words, for whatever they're worth, to the 60 or 70 people who may be listening tonight, in not pursuing the Nazis that have run this country for the past 7+ years, in not pursuing them, we are guaranteeing the death of representative government, the death of this democratic republic, and the death of democracy, not to mention the use of these tactics and techniques by subsequent administrations, be they Republican or Democrat, is utterly and absolutely of no consequence. And maybe at some point, foreign scholars, since certainly the time will come when scholars in the United States will be discouraged from writing lengthy monographs about this, but perhaps foreign scholars at some point in the future may take a look at U.S. history and mark very clearly the time period within which the institutions of U.S. government were collapsed deliberately and malignantly. And that period will encompass the Bush crime family. That will be when the initial efforts were made, starting in 2001. And whether or not the attack on the Constitution ends with the removal of this son of a bitch and his filthy posse from office remains to be seen. There's something, isn't there, about power that once it has been accumulated and handed off, when it is handed off, it's very difficult for the handee to take a look at the corruption involved in that power, remembering the axiom. It is very difficult for the handee of that power to take a look at it and say, oh, well, no, I don't want this. No. This puts too much in my and my advisor's hands. No, I want to dilute and diffuse this power. I want to return to the legislative branch that which is theirs constitutionally. I want to return to the American people those rights guaranteed by that Constitution. I would like to remove from the federal judiciary those neo-Nazis who are further corrupting the process. No, I don't want all of this power. I don't want it. I want it to go away. This is not how it was set up. So while I am the handee in this handoff, I don't want it. I'm all about change. Yes, I can. Yes, you can. Yes, we can. Scary stuff, and we are most definitely at that juncture in this nation's history. We're here. You and I, we're here. We get to be witnesses to this. Whether or not we see anything change depends on where we are on, I don't know, the time/age scale. Some of the more younger listeners to this program may see this resolve. Some of the older listeners in my age group may not see this resolve at all. And the resolution may be, the resolution the younger people see, may be something that is not really a result that older folks would like to see.
I was going to say, when you were talking about Barack there, yes, I can, yes, we can, yes, you can. I started to think about the children's series, Run, Spot, Run.
It's just about that bad, isn't it? We'll be back after the break. And we're going to leave this topic and move on. But we will take your phone calls on it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Mike Molloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Very quick email, then we're going to go to your phone calls. This is from Jaime. He writes, Mike, in case you missed Countdown tonight, Tuesday, Obama's counsel says there will be no prosecutions for unconstitutional and or illegal activities of the Bush administration under an Obama presidency unless these actions meet some vague, undefined, quote, egregious, end quote, criteria. He also, Obama's counsel, also likened such prosecutions of the Bushes to the Clinton impeachment. Not only is that a load of crap, it's the Republican, a major Republican talking point. So, Jaime writes, that about sums it up. Obama's only a little better than Bush and McCain, if that. Crimes against the Constitution, covert CIA agents, and the people of this country aren't... crimes against the Constitution and the people of this country aren't egregious? I don't know what to say. Sometimes I think my head is going to explode. I know I deserve a lot better, but I'm not going to get it in this country. No one is. Neither will the kids coming behind you and me. Apparently, the House Judiciary Committee can stop pardons just by starting impeachment hearings. They don't have to actually issue articles of impeachment or vote on them or have a trial in the Senate. Pelosi and Reid should have been booted long ago. Jaime. Well, I'm not aware of that. He also sent a link to MSNBC.com. Apparently, he was on the Countdown program tonight. If that is the case, then I guess the qualifier there, the little crack in the door. Unless these actions by the Bush administration meet some vague, undefined, egregious criteria, what is more egregious than invading a helpless country, committing murder? Absolute murder. This was not these killings. These are acts of murder. This is not under a declaration of war. This is not in keeping with Geneva Conventions. This is murder. This is murder. We murder people in their homes, whether those homes are in Iraq or Afghanistan. We take our detainees and torture them to death. I mean, that is not protected anywhere in the law. Not in our law, not in international law. This is murder. I realize murder is a legal term. You're goddamn right. That's why Bliosi has written a book indicting George W. Bush for murder. It's a legal term. Murder. That's what they have committed. That's not egregious enough for Senator Barack Obama? Murder? Bombing civilians, invading helpless countries, occupations, that's not enough? That's not egregious? Oh, my God. Okay, I'm sorry. Jesus H. Christ. All right, a couple of phone calls on this, and then we're going to move on to an aspect of this, and that is this putrid, filthy, given a chance, Nazi death camp guard Michael Savage. There is some updates on that filthy story. Alan is calling from Helsinki, Finland, listening on the Internet. Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you? You're just back from Kathmandu?
Yeah, I just got back from Kathmandu, and while I was there, I was reading the newspaper, suffering from terrible diarrhea, and I came across this quote from Galileo Galilei, and it was the turning point because it just made me laugh out loud. The quote reads, "I have never met a man so ignorant that I couldn't learn something from him." And of course, I thought of Raisin Brain, the Guacamoron, President Dumbass, and all the other wonderful labels that you and Harrison have given him.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've often challenged the listeners to say, name one good thing he's done. Well, I throw out the challenge. Let's name one deep thing this man has said. I mean, he's made thousands, almost millions of misstatements. But has he ever said anything that has made us even think?
No, nothing.
Yeah. Absolutely nothing.
I have been on this thug like white on rice since he took office.
Think on doo-doo.
Yeah, that too, since he took office. And I have never heard anything come out of his mouth that in any way was presidential, inspirational, of a leadership quality. Nothing. It has all been either murder talk or garbage or cynicism, or some sort of garbled, attack on the English language, malapropisms. Nothing has ever made any sense from this man. Nothing. Not one thing.
Yeah. There's an 8-letter word that begins with B, and everybody can fill in the blank, as to, you know, what this man has come out with. He's really redefined the word, if you will.
Cow droppings?
That begins with B and ends with T.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with that word. Yes, indeedy. Uh-huh.
That's right. I mean, I could have said expletive, but I just wanted you to think a little bit, you know.
Yeah, well, I certainly appreciate that. What were you doing in Kathmandu?
Well, my wife is working at the Finnish embassy on a part-time basis for a friend of hers who's vacationing now here in Finland. And, Mike, what I saw was what the race to the bottom could be many generations from now.
But, I mean, describe that.
Just, you know, it's almost anarchy there. You know, the Maoists have kicked the royals out. There are petrol lines that stretch 5 miles long.
Was this the royal family that insisted on murdering each other?
Well, I don't pretend to know the whole situation. I was only there for 10 days, and you know, I don't really want to do like, you know, Raisin Brain does, just, you know, just bar full of whatever.
But it is chaos in that country.
It is. I mean, Kathmandu is like the third world plus. I mean, if you go out of Kathmandu, it's something that I haven't seen yet, because I was only there for 10 days, and, you know, I was sick for a little bit of it, and, you know, the driving is just completely chaos. Cows walking in the middle of the street, garbage all over the place. I mean, in this beautiful, amazing land, the city's at 1,350 meters, and you know, it's rainy season, so you know you could rarely ever see the peaks that surround the city. There's no infrastructure. Food is terrific, by the way. Oh my God, the food is incredible. But you know that here's a situation where, I mean, this is a country where nobody has socialized health care. Right. You know, nobody's paying any taxes. It's really, you know, for all our truck drivers who keep saying, oh, we pay too much in taxes. Well, I saw the consequence of what happens when there is no infrastructure, when there's no government, there's no system. And I was overwhelmed by what I saw. It somehow it just works, Mike. It's the best way I can explain it. Somehow. And it really touched me in the fact that, I mean, I'd been to Brazil once, and I'd seen the favelas just stretch on and on and on. But here I was, you know, in a place where, you know, it wasn't that bad, but it just hit you in such a way that, my God, if we could just not even spend one third of the money that we do on defense every year, and then all the Western countries just really concentrate on two things, you know, making sure that every human being has proper, you know, clean water and clean sanitation, and also education. Boy, the problems of our world would be nothing.
Well, I hear you. And what's making your story even more weird is the fact that it's my understanding that Kathmandu is the most developed city in Nepal.
Yes, it is. It is. When you go, I saw kids take showers, you know, where there's just there's a running water and where there's water spilling out right there. I mean, right out in the open in the street. And it really blew my mind. I mean, I'm going to take some pictures. You know, I just got back less than 24 hours ago, and I'm going to send them to you
Please do. We'll put a link up at our website so that people can take a look at what you experienced. Alan, thank you very much for checking in with us. I'm sorry I held you on hold for so long.
Oh, no, that's okay. And, you know, I mean, I'm catching up on my podcast here. Your show of July 13th, or whatever, I forget exactly what day it was, when you discussed the Christopher Hitchens and the torture.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 17 seconds is all it took for Hitchens to almost die.
Yes, absolutely brilliant Malloy that was.
Well, thanks, Alan. Okay. Thanks for checking in, pal. We got
always will.
All right, take care. Take care.
You too.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
They're giving me the best. I've lived there all my life. I've been the guest. I sure have loved it too. I'm tired of looking at the TV news. I'm tired of driving hard and paying dues. I figure, baby, I got nothing to lose. I'm tired of being blue. Oh, it's not going to Kathmandu. Up to the mountains where I'm going to.
I understand the anguish that some feel about the death that takes place. Well, I grieve for every death.
22 past the hour. All right, let's get a few more calls in before we move on. Neil is calling from Mayfield, Kentucky, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Neil, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Sure.
Yeah, I've got a comment about you, your opinion on President Bush being tried for war crimes.
Uh-huh.
Because he's actually stood up and faced the enemy.
What enemy?
Al-Qaeda.
Oh, Al-Qaeda where?
Okay, well, just
Wait, Neil, don't go flying monkey right on me. Let's play nice. Al-Qaeda where?
Al-Qaeda, wherever they may be.
Okay, but they were not in Iraq. Why did he invade Iraq? Neil, let me ask you something. There were 19 people who came to this country on September 1st, 2001, and murdered 3,000 people on our soil. What countries were those 19 people from?
They may have been from
Neil, this is common knowledge. 15 of them were from one country. Which country was that?
Saudi Arabia.
Why did we not invade Saudi Arabia?
Because we were bright enough not to invade a country where the people in Al-Qaeda, it's a terrorist organization that is spread out all over Islam, all right? We tracked them down in Afghanistan.
Who's been
Saudi Arabia?
Who's been telling you this?
We're going after Al Qaeda. Okay.
Saddam Hussein.
After we were attacked.
Put this ass on hold because I'm not going to let him keep overtalking me. Put him on hold. Let me tell you how it's going to work, Neil. If you want to be on this program, I'll ask some questions. I'll give you a chance to answer. You can ask me some questions. You can give me a chance to answer. But if you keep shooting off your mouth like a typical diarrhea-filled chump, you're not going to be on the program. It's so simple. Now let's try this guy one more time. Okay, Neil. Now, what is Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda is a terrorist organization.
That's like telling me that Lake Michigan is a big body of water. What is Al-Qaeda?
They're the enemy.
Get rid of them. Get this jackass off my program. Get him off my program. Oh, Jesus Christ, I just can't stand that. I'll tell you what, Neil, you just continue to walk around with your head up your ass until you finally suffocate, okay? But what you are saying, what you are doing is supporting... Never mind.
The argument that always seems to miss these folks is that there are more Al-Qaeda today than ever before, precisely because of George Bush's actions in the Middle East and his policies there.
Well,
there are more terrorists in general. Let's not even say Al-Qaeda. There's more Islamic folk out there who hate us and want to hurt us than ever before because Bush became a walking recruiting poster for any Middle Eastern terrorists.
What Neil doesn't understand is that the biggest... purveyor, is that the word I want, of terrorism on this planet has become the United States. He doesn't understand that he lives in a terrorist nation. He doesn't understand that the government of his country engages in terrorism. Neil doesn't understand about the Geneva Conventions or rules of engagement or any. He has no idea what he's talking about. He is a walking poster boy for willful ignorance. He is what happens. Neil is what happens when, after years of Rush Limbaugh stepping on his foot and the top of his head springing open, and Limbaugh dumping all the day's garbage directly onto his brainstem, Neil is what results. Neil is the result. Jesus. Neil doesn't understand, nor does he care how many cab drivers and innocent children and women have been tortured for Bush's illegal war. And he'll never understand why we invaded Iraq instead of Saudi Arabia. Neil is a half-witted moron. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Maloney.
Here we go now. Keep it low brow. Get stupid. Why? Cause I know how. Check my brain in. Be an idiot. Act lame in. Stay ignorant. Be remedial. Wear the dust cap. Slouch over and drool like a hunchback. Don't discuss things. Shout the last word. Put your person out the pasture. Drop your IQ. That's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists. Try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down.
25 before the hour. I apologize for the idiocy of the caller Neil from, I believe it was from Kentucky. We always hope against hope that when we allow someone who is a Bush supporter on this program, that there will at least be some coherence to what they're saying, whether it's right or wrong, that there might be some, and it's easy to tell when it's right or wrong, that there be something coherent that the caller has to say. And, you know, I know a lot of folks who listen to this program think that the best way to handle someone like that is to toy with them the way a cat would toy with a huge cockroach before flipping it on its back and waiting for the homeowner to come around and step on it. But I just don't, you know, I can't do that. So I apologize for his utter the ignorance and the dedication that people like that show to the destruction of this country. Is that's the part that's scary to me, because that's what they're about. I don't know if Neil or his ilk realize what they're doing. I know they're not redeemable. That sorry son of a bitch will be that way until the day he dies. All of these right-wingers, there is no such thing as redemption. That's why, you know, for the people who do say, well, Malloy, why don't you spend a little time with him trying to straighten him out? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? First of all, it would take an industrial-sized drill with a bit, I don't know, a four-inch in diameter bit just to get through the concrete that encases his brain. Holy Christ. You know, again, when you have spent years of your life listening and absorbing the garbage put out there by people like Limbaugh and Michael Regan and Hannity and the rest of these monstrous right-wingers, when you have gotten to that point where you've absorbed so much of that, the redemption, my ass, there's no way out. You have become zombieized. That's it. That's it. And usually when I encounter people like that in a social setting or out in public life, I just turn around and walk away. I my last encounter with a freak like that was some woman at a cocktail party in Chicago in 1999. And I'll never forget that, her comment about Clinton. He's an effing liar! You know, that kind of stuff. That was it for me. I walk away from people like that. So again, if your question is why do you allow these people on the air if you're not going to let them speak, it's not a question of not letting them speak. It's a question of hoping against hope that there will be something coherent that tumbles out of these jackasses' minds. It's just or mouths. It's just unbelievable, unbelievable. Okay. So that's enough of that. Back to your phone calls. Roy is calling from Florida, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Roy, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm great. I'm just here visiting. I live in Venezuela. I moved down there a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just amazed. I was listening to Sirius, and it's the first time I've ever heard anybody on American radio admit that they have a terrorist government. It just blew my mind what you said. It's so true.
Really? Maybe you haven't heard enough progressive or liberal talk show hosts. I mean, I don't know.
Down there we don't get it. It's all in Spanish anyway.
Yeah. Well, if you use the definition of terrorism that seems to work for most legitimate governments, whether those governments are here in Europe, in Latin America, in Asia, it really doesn't matter. The definition of terror or the use of terror against a legitimate government is pretty clear. And if you use those definitions, then the government of the United States is and has been for a number of years. We have experimented with terror, but it has against other nations and non-state actors, as they're referred to. But it's only been under the Bush crime family, the Bush administration, that the use of terror has been made legal.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But
so
it's an example of what's happening in Venezuela. The American government is all over down there. But last November, before they had the referendum elections, I was in Caracas, and there was all this so-called student protest, and I was across the street from one, and I walked over. There was four guys in their early 30s, gringos. I walked up to them, snuck around the back, like got alongside, and said, "What are you guys, CIA?" And they all kind of turned around and looked at me, put their heads down, and walked away. I said, "Yeah, of course you are. You need to stir up this nonsense." It was just, and, you know, the American government, last year, your taxpayers spent $27 million trying to subvert the government down there, funding opposition groups.
Oh, sure.
It's absolutely obscene what's going on in Venezuela. You know, Americans, you should be outraged.
But most Americans don't have a clue, Roy, as to what's going on. We have also tried actively to overthrow the government of Hugo Chavez twice.
Absolutely, yeah. In 2002, you guys were behind the coup. Absolutely.
So it's the problem in this country is the fact that we are kept so incredibly ignorant by, first of all, our own lack of interest in finding this stuff out, but also because of mainstream media in this country, the established corporate media that refuse to provide for Americans what we desperately need in order to make some critical decisions about who's going to lead us, what our foreign policy will be, what our domestic policy would be. And that is one of the hallmarks of a terrorist state, but it's also one of the hallmarks of a society or a civilization that is in absolute decline. And this is the part that bothers me. I want to be a citizen of a country that has a constitution such as ours, that is honored the way our constitution has been in the past. I want to live in a country where a constitution is recognized as a living document that changes as societal mores and norms change. And I used to live in a place like that, but not any longer.
Yeah, well, you used to have an opposition as well. You used to have a Democratic Party that stood for something.
That's true.
I'm British. We used to have a Labour Party that stood for something.
Yeah.
You know, now they're just corporate whores like the Democrats are in this country. They'll say and do anything to get elected, and then they line their own pockets. That's the shame. They've sold out the middle class in this country like they have in Britain. Like the Labour Party did in Britain. It's shameful.
I hear you.
It really is.
Well, Roy,
keep up the good fight.
Thank you for calling. I hope to hear from you again. I appreciate your taking time to check in with us, all right?
Take care. Good night.
All right. Same to you. Regarding, let me just expand on what Roy said. This is news that you'll see in the Times tomorrow, New York Times tomorrow. President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela and President Dmitry Medvedev of Russia declared today that their two countries would more closely coordinate their actions on global oil and gas markets and that they would work together on foreign policy, a sphere in which both countries have sought to counter American influence. Now, the Times will have this story tomorrow. It's probably up on their website now. But it is another clear indication of the utter and absolute failure, the failure in this hemisphere of the Bush crime family's policies. Chavez, by the way, with the visit, his visit to Moscow, is expected to sign contracts to purchase more than $1 billion worth of Russian armaments. And Chavez, in Moscow, is calling for Russia and Venezuela to become, quote, strategic partners, end quote, to defend against what he called, what Chavez called, an American threat to his country. Chavez, according to the official Russian news agency RIA Novosti, said, quote, that becoming strategic partners with Russia will guarantee, his words now, quote, will guarantee the sovereignty of Venezuela, which the United States is now threatening, end quote. This is another example. Another example of Bush foreign policy, this murder, Cheney foreign policy, this murderous attitude. If we don't like you, if you have oil we want, then you sons of bitches, we will find a way to overthrow your legitimate government establish one not so legitimate that favors us. And if you stand in our way, God damn you, we will declare you a terrorist state. We will invade you as we have invaded Iran already. We will commit acts of sabotage against you. We will kidnap your nationals. We will torture them. Eventually, we will murder them. And we will do this because we can. Now, if that's not the definition of a terrorist state, please, somebody, for God's sake, tell me what is.
You can sing. And I'm underneath the streetlight. The delight and joy I know. Scared beyond belief. Way down in the shadows. And the perverted fear of violence chokes the smile on every face. Common sense is ringing out the bell.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 10 before the hour. We're going to play this bootleg video for you coming back next hour of Bush speaking at a fundraiser for some right-wing pissant down in Dallas. It was supposed to be off the record, but somebody got it. It only runs about 2 minutes. But in the meantime, regarding Obama pursuing the Bush crime family, we can pretty much forget that. Donald in Augusta, Georgia writes, Mike, don't know if you saw Democracy Now! Today. I didn't. But Cass Sunstein, an Obama campaign legal advisor, has already laid the groundwork for letting these criminals off the hook. He did the same old song and dance the invertebrate Democrats always do when faced with criminals in the Republican Party, the likes of Bush, Cheney, Reagan, so on. Of course, he talked about finding the truth of the matter, but not as a matter of punishing the criminals. Rather, to put in place laws to make sure it doesn't happen again. Kind of like FISA in 1978, right? Donald goes on. He says the investigations should happen in Congress or some truth commission, but not through the courts. It is his opinion, Cass Sunstein's, and presumably Obama's, that, quote, real crimes, end quote, should be punished, but hasten to say we shouldn't criminalize policy debates. Well, isn't that just peachy? So nothing happened, right? These criminals just sat in the Situation Room and played war games on some goddamn television screen. So let me get this straight. The Iraq War, lies and all, the torture, Gitmo, Abu Ghraib, outing a CIA agent, warrantless wiretapping, all of this were just policy debates. Damn, Donald writes, I'd better wake the hell up real soon because it seems awfully real to me. We're effed again. And the Democrats will once again let these criminals off the hook. Why don't we just empty all the prisons and jail cells in America, if I use his circular logic? Donald in Augusta, Georgia, and Mark in Harlem writes, Mike, here's a response I received today from Obama after signing a petition demanding he go after Bush if he's elected. Dear friend, thank you for contacting me to share your thoughts on President George W. Bush's administration. I appreciate and share your high level of dissatisfaction and frustration with the president, his actions, and his priorities. I disagree with him on many issues, ranging from the war in Iraq to the future of Social Security to funding our children's schools. I support robust congressional investigations into his administration and the highly questionable actions it has taken in areas such as domestic spying and the U.S. attorney firings. He has horribly mismanaged the rebuilding of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. The Democratic Congress has achieved important progress this year, and we are still stymied by a president who is out of sync with the American people, vetoing legislation to responsibly get us out of Iraq and to support increased stem cell research. talk about compound sentences that are just gibberish here. continuing. I will continue to move forward with a positive agenda in the Senate and on the campaign trail. I hope you will stay involved and work for progress on the issues that matter most to you. Thank you again for writing. Sincerely, Barack Obama. Paid for by Obama for America. Okay. Now, to the Clinton supporters out there, the Hillary Clinton supporters who are just dying to say, see, Malloy, we told you so. No, that you didn't tell me so. I mean, I knew this to begin with, as did just damn near everybody else, that the difference between Obama and Hillary Clinton was a matter of rhetoric. We talked about this on this program. And does anyone out there honestly believe that Hillary Clinton would pursue members of the Bush crime family? To the extent that there is the slightest little tiny pinpoint of light representing a ray of hope that an Obama administration might pursue, to that extent, there at least is the pinpoint of light. In the Hillary Clinton administration, it would be midnight in a coal bin at the bottom of a long mine shaft. No light at all. Which is not necessarily to condemn Hillary Clinton any more than it is to condemn Barack Obama. These are corporate Democrats. We talked about this. I swear to God, we talked about this. Anyone who thinks that an Obama administration is going to unload on these, did Clinton unload on Pappy Bush regarding Iran-Contra? He did not. Even though the crimes committed by the George Herbert Walker Bush administration and the Reagan administration prior to Pappy Bush, those crimes constituted war crimes also. But investigations were ended, pardons were accepted, activities by special prosecutors were brought to an end, and Bill Clinton turned away and said, "It's the economy, stupid." The terror, the criminality that represents George W. Bush's administration has its genesis, its roots, its tentacles in his father's administration and Ronald Reagan's. That's when the core turned rotten. And what has happened since? Well, take a look. Venezuela and Russia. My goodness. Oh, Venezuela, by the way, is Russia's largest weapons customer in Latin America and a fast-growing trade partner, according to the New York Times. Russia's gas and oil giants have signed agreements in Mr. Chavez's presence to explore reserves in Venezuela's Orinoco Valley. Well, well, well. Stick around. We'll be back after the break, and you can hear George Bush talk about how Wall Street got drunk. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. My name is Mike Malloy. This story was up a couple hours ago at TV News Live's website. It's also in the Washington Post. From the Post Foreign Service, the dateline is Moscow. And a couple of sentences here. The lead says, Russian bombers capable of carrying nuclear weapons could be deployed to Cuba in response to U.S. plans to install a missile defense system in Eastern Europe. A Russian newspaper reported Monday, citing an unnamed senior Russian Air Force official. The report in Izvestia, which could not be confirmed, prompted memories of the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis when the U.S.-Soviet Union came to the brink of nuclear war. Yada, 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 yada. See, this is the Bush foreign policy. The so-called missile defense system that Bush has been shoving up the anuses of former communist countries, Eastern Bloc countries, is no more of a defense system than I'm the Pope. It is an aggressive system designed to intimidate a reemerging and oil-rich Russia. And the response is in kind. You know, a lot of people say that Putin is Bush's doppelganger. No, Putin is a lot smarter than Bush could ever hope to be. And remember how one can only guess how insulted Putin was with the utterly and absolutely massively condescending statement that Bush made after meeting Putin for the first time in declaring that he could look into Putin's soul, and what he saw was reassuring. At that point, Putin must have almost come unglued. To think that this twit, this half-witted baseball club owner, would make that sort of a statement about Vladimir Putin. I mean, how pissed off must have old Vlad gotten on that one, huh? All right, I want you to hear this bit of sound now. It is from Texas. It's from a fundraiser down there. But because the sound quality is poor, I'm going to give you a reading here, and then we're going to play it. This is Bush at a fundraiser for, who's the guy? It's somebody in, somebody running for the U.S. House in Texas. The name of the... Who? Pete Olson? Pete Olson. Yeah, Pete Olson. Republican Pete Olson. The name of the Republican is utterly inconsequential. Who cares? But here's what Bush said. You'll hear this on the audio. When he's asked about the economy by somebody in the crowd, this was not to be photographed. Asked about the economy, he says, it's uncertain. There's no question about it. Wall Street got drunk. It got drunk. That's one of the reasons I asked you to turn off your TV cameras. It got drunk, and now it's got a hangover. The question is, how long will it sober up and not try to do all these fancy financial instruments? And now we got a housing issue, not in Houston, and evidently not in Dallas, because Laura was over there trying to buy a house today. You know, I like Crawford, Texas. Unfortunately, after 8 years of asking her to sacrifice, I'm now no longer the decision maker. She'll be deciding. Thanks for the suggestion. I suggest you don't yell it out when she's here. Later, telling her, hey, honey, we've been on government pay now for 14 years, so go slow. It's caused me to lose my train of thought. Anyway. All right. Listen to this.
It is uncertain. There's no question about it. Wall Street got drunk. That's one reason I should turn off the TV cameras. He got drunk and now it's got a hangover. The question is how long will it sober up and not try to do all these fancy financial instruments. And then we got a housing issue, not in Houston, evidently not in Dallas, because Laura was over there trying to buy a house today. Sacrifice, I am no longer the decision maker.
Isn't that fun? Isn't that fun? I tend to wonder, not that it makes any difference, but I tend to wonder what the drunks on Wall Street think of Bush's comment. Here's a dry drunk. Here's a coke abuser. Here's a drug addict. And why are so many Republicans hung up on alcohol or drugs? That's a different issue. But here is this twit saying that Wall Street got drunk. That's one of the reasons I asked you to turn off the TV cameras. I don't want them to know that I think they're a bunch of, you know, asses. I really don't. You got drunk. Now it's got a hangover. Wall Street doesn't give a damn about him. George W. Bush was just one more example of using protection money to cover the asses of corporate America. The real power in this administration has been Dick Cheney and all the corruption he has brought. Bush is a front man. He's a clown, just like Limbaugh and Hannity and Savage and the rest of these thugs. It is the protection money. That's why they make the millions, the protection money to cover the asses of corporate America. Bush is a clown, but he happens to be a very deadly clown who has cost Americans and Iraqis thousands upon thousands upon thousands of lives. A clown. A murderous clown. But it's great fun to get together, folks, over in Dallas and laugh and don't tell Laura. You know, she's the decider now. You know, I've had her on government payroll for 14 years. God damn, you know, we got to figure out a way to make some money here. I don't know. I'm sure my buddies in Saudi Arabia will come through for me, don't you think? Here is a press release from Media Matters for America. MediaMatters.org, if you would like your own copy. With an advertiser pulling sponsorship and a radio network dropping his program, conservative talk radio host Michael Savage yesterday sought to recast controversial comments he made last week, in which he said autism is a fraud and a hoax, and that most children with autism are just brats who haven't been told to cut the act out. Responding to the uproar caused by his comments, Savage said, "I stand by my words," and he lashed out at Media Matters for America, the progressive media watchdog that on Thursday first noted Savage's controversial remarks. Despite using words such as dummy, idiot, brat, moron, and fool to refer to children with autism, Savage said he was misquoted and taken out of context. Jay Palmer, a spokesman for Media Matters, said, quote, "Michael Savage is desperately trying to dig himself out of a hole by qualifying his original comments. The reality is he didn't use any qualifiers when taking his mean-spirited swipe at children with autism and their families," end quote. Savage's comments on his nationally syndicated radio program have been roundly denounced by a host of organizations seeking to raise awareness and promote sensitivity regarding the needs of those with autism. During the same program, Savage said children, quote, in the minority community, end quote, were told to say they had asthma as part of a, quote, money racket to get extra welfare benefits, end quote. In response to Savage's remarks, the insurance company Aflac announced it would no longer sponsor Savage's program, while the seven-station Super Talk Mississippi Radio Network has decided to drop Savage's program from its lineup. Media Matters spokesman Palmer said, quote, "Savage can try to obfuscate matters all he wants, but the fact remains his words are his words, and they were clearly directed at children with autism. Instead of trying to shift blame, you ought to do what's right and apologize to the millions of autistic children, their families, and others he insulted," end quote. Apologize? This Nazi son of a bitch? Oh, please.
Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. I am not involved in anger management at all. Been consumed by it. Regarding this filthy Nazi pig, Michael Wiener, the savage Wiener, the talk show host, who would have been okay with the idea of sending Jewish children to their deaths in the death camps in Poland and Germany during the 40s. Yes, he would have. This email, this is from Wilcox. The subject line is Michael Savage's comments reflect society's attitude. He or she writes, I have worked with special needs children for the past 16 years, including autistic children. All school districts have policies concerning bullying, intimidation, unwanted touching, and harassment. Once a child enters a so-called special education classroom, these policies no longer exist. I have observed firsthand a boy rubbing up against a female student, grabbing her while trying to lick her in the face. Her teacher stood about 4 feet from her and did nothing, even though she was covering her face and screaming. The little girl, child, the child student was. I've been trying to promote some sort of balance for the past 2 years. I would never deny a student the opportunity to go to school, but I'm tired of the school district lumping all the kids together in one class, learning disabled with behavioral problem kids, because it is cheaper, and then allowing the behavioral problem kids to prey on the learning disabled kids. The students who are the least capable of going home and telling mommy and daddy are the kids who are targeted. I have not quit the school district because I only have one more year to be eligible for a pension, but after next year I will be gone because I have written the governor, the head of state public education, the ACLU, Americans with Disabilities, and congresspeople with little or no response. What this all comes down to is this. Society does not care about special needs children. There's a lack of appropriate curriculum, and the classrooms are understaffed. I'm tired of being told that the district policies are a gray area, so-called, when it comes to special needs children. They deserve the same level of sanity, or I'm sorry, they deserve the same level of safety, security, and respect as regular education students. Will Michael Savage be reprimanded for his comments? I doubt it. Yeah, his or her point is that Savage can get away with saying something like that, and the only people who will respond are people who are directly involved in the care of and the comfort directed toward or the education provided to children with autism. But Savage is Michael Savage is no more and no less typical of right wingers than anyone else who broadcasts from that point of view. It's all over the country, no matter where you are, 24/7, border to border, coast to coast. And why corporate America puts this out? Well, we all know the answer. Like I've said, it is protection money that is paid to these filthy, piggish talk radio hosts. It's just astonishing that this sort of thing just continues day after day after day after day. And the newest enabler of this sort of corruption on a national level will be President Barack Obama. Because President Obama, I think it's very clear now, will do nothing about the criminality displayed by Bush. And in that respect, Yolanda writes, Mike, I really appreciate your passion. Listen to your show just about every evening. I just wanted to explain a little something to you to maybe give you a little insight into Barack's predicament. He's a black man in the U.S. running for president. As dangerous as this act is, he will certainly not be here very long if he starts talking about impeachment or prosecution, which is the white man's privilege. We know the Bush crime family will kill people without any fear of retaliation. We know Barack Obama's days would be numbered, without question, if he dares threaten or hurt a hair on that freak's head. Anyway, your reckless regard for talking that way is not something afforded to any black man in America, not even Barack Obama, as any black person can attest to. Yes, Yolanda's right, and I understand that. I do understand that. As false as this may sound to some people who listen to this program, there are times, not always, there are times when I don't see Barack Obama's blackness. There are times when I just see him as a man who's going to be the next president of the United States. And with that comes the responsibility of going after the people who have utterly and absolutely attempted to destroy this country. Yeah, there are times when I see Barack Obama as a candidate, not as a black candidate.
No fuss so far. And I say anything you can do, I can do it better. I'm the toughest. And I can do what you can do. You never try to do what I do. I'm the toughest. I'm the toughest.
Truth seekers, time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, back to your phone calls. Al is calling from Alabama, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Al.
Yes.
Welcome to the program. Hi.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
I was listening earlier. I was wanting to understand the pardons. Or was you saying that Bush and them can give themselves a pardon before they leave office?
If not himself, he can pardon everyone else in his administration. And as far as I know, there is no prohibition against him pardoning himself.
That angered me when I was heard you talk here about that. There.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And you were talking about Congress, and the way I understand it, I mean, they're not going to do anything about it. And everybody here in America seems to think that there's something going on. But when I think it was 2020 when I watched a show showing Mary Pelosi having a party that it cost you $10,000 a head to get into.
Uh-huh.
If that's not corrupt, looking like corruption, it just angers me bad. I want them to know and hear this show that we are sick and tired of it. We're not as stupid as they think, and it's about time to vote them out and get some new people in. And that Neil that called in wanted to talk about Saudi Arabia. Well, you know, Bush was trying to give her ports, sell our ports to Saudi Arabia, and they're the main ones that bombed us. I mean, how stupid can you get?
As stupid as Neil, but as far as Pelosi and some of these so-called leading Democrats, I'll tell you, Al, we are in that proverbial space between a rock and a hard place. And I hate to call out the name of George Wallace because I know what George Wallace was all about. But I've said this before. Way back in 1968, he made the observation when he was running for president that there's not a dime's worth of difference between Democrats and Republicans. And, you know, back in 68, I thought to myself, you know, this man is just out of his mind. And 99% of what George Wallace stood for is not something I stand for. But I'll tell you what, turns out, don't you think, Al, that maybe old Wallace was right where it concerned not a dime's worth of difference between Democrats and Republicans, certainly not the ones in leadership positions?
He may have on that, but I just didn't much care for him and his views. He didn't represent everybody in Alabama.
I hear that.
He was just too racist, and that's something else that bothers me. When I tell somebody I don't like Obama, it all matter becomes a racial issue. The person I would like to see in office would be either Colin Powell. I believe that's a good, respected man, Al Gore, something like that. We just don't have nobody to vote for.
You think Colin Powell, even though he sat there in the United Nations and told lie after lie after lie about Iraq?
Well, that makes a patriot, because he argued with Bush that he did not want to say it, that it was wrong. And I guess just being like a patriot, he said what he had to say, and then he came out of office because he was having so much conflict with him. And I wish he could stand up and say what he knows also.
Well, you know, back in when was it? I think in the presidential race back in 1990, some Republicans approached. Was it 90 or maybe it was 94? Republicans approached Colin Powell and asked him if he would run against Clinton, I guess, and as a Republican. And Powell said he would not. And the reason, he and his wife feared for his physical safety if he ran for president. So, but I hear what you're saying about Colin Powell. I guess there were some things redeemable about him, but maybe I just know too much because I've read too much about him. Al, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. All right? Take care. Andy is calling from Alaska, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, hey, Andy.
And Powell said he was not.
Hey, Andy.
It's
okay, Andy's on a fishing boat. Hey, Andy. Let's go to hold. Let's put Andy on hold for a second. Andy is the commercial fisherman who goes after those snow crabs. All right, Andy, if you can hear me, I'm going to take another caller, but listen up, because we're going to come to you next. Clifford is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Clifford. Hey, Clifford. Do-de-do-de-do. Is Clifford there? Hey, okay, Clifford's not there. Okay. Is Andy back? Let's try Andy again. Andy?
Hello.
Hi, Andy.
Hey, Mike.
Are you at work right now?
I'm kind of whiffing out. I'm driving back to town.
Good to hear from you. How's the crabbing business?
It's okay. I'm salmon fishing. So.
Oh, you're salmon fishing.
Yeah, it's okay. Price is up a little, but it kind of just evens out with the price of fuel, so it's sort of just pretty much the same as last year, I guess, which is good.
Is there any other fish you can go for? Let me tell you why. I read something recently and decided to agree with the writer that the salmon stock, for a number of reasons, has been so depleted. The building of the dams through the state of Washington, the depletion of wild salmon in the Pacific, and the recommendation was to stop buying salmon, not as a form of protest, but as a reaction to the fact that the salmon stock is being reduced to a critical level where, you know, this species may not be able to recover. What's your opinion on that? Help me out here.
Okay, well, it's a complicated issue because the salmon stock, each stock is a different river. So, yeah, Our king salmon quota has been reduced quite a bit because most of our kings that we catch up here are actually running down to Washington State, Oregon, mm-hmm. California, and of course they're having problems with those rivers because they've destroyed the habitat up on the rivers with the dams and the nuclear power plants and the chemical industries and all, you know, everything that mm-hmm. goes with overdevelopment on a river. So we've definitely reduced our catch rate with that, and that sucks for us, but basically we're all for it because we don't want to, you know, we want a future. We don't want to destroy our future by killing every last one of them.
Uh-huh.
So we're on a reduced rate with that, and I believe that management is done well.
Well, what do you
cut in half.
What are you doing then as a commercial fisherman to take up the slack?
Well, up here we fish for another one of the five species of Pacific salmon, which is coho, silver salmon, and they're really good eating too, almost just as good as a king.
Mm-hmm.
And these fish, they all return to our rivers here in Southeast Alaska, so, and our rivers are doing fine, and we haven't I mean, the whole place is pretty much a national forest, so there's no there's no problem, you know.
So, Coho.
Our management is such that we're on an abundance-based management with cohos. If there's not enough, we've got people in most of the rivers, all the major rivers, who literally count fish as they go by.
Mm-hmm.
And they know when there's enough, you know, so that they'll repopulate. But if there isn't, we just get shut down.
We always
get shut down for about a week every summer or two. Make sure that that happens. Make sure that they all, enough of them get up into the rivers to spawn and start the cycle all over again.
All right. Well, Andy, let me ask you then. So for someone down here in the lower 48 who enjoys salmon on for several reasons, then your recommendation would be to switch from king to coho.
Well, you know, any wild salmon that's caught is being is good. I mean, it's all being managed well, and all the fisheries down on the West Coast have been pretty much completely shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So any fish that's trying to swim up its river down there can get up there. So I would still suggest, yeah, buy wild pink salmon, buy wild coho. It's being managed well. It's not like it's going to die off. And if it looks like it is, it'll just be shut down completely. So I would say still buy wild salmon. Definitely don't buy farm salmon, because that's another major contributor to the degradation of the ocean.
Yeah, I would
farm
never.
Farm fish are killing. Yeah, farm fish are fed with all kinds of weird stuff. And,
right.
The amount of waste they lay out on the ocean floor is killing all the sea life on the ocean floor. So
plus, it's my understanding that they're very, very subject to diseases.
They're in a crowded. They keep them in crowded pens, which is totally unnatural for them. So disease spreads, and so therefore they have to feed them antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
The antibiotics is escaping out into the rest of the biosphere in the ocean, and other things are getting it. And it's just the things that, I mean, they have killer whale problems because the killer whales attack the nest to try to get in there and eat all the salmon. So they put these intense underwater sound blasting devices there, which starts screwing up all the killer whales and the sea lions and all their patterns. They can't get into where they would naturally have food. I mean, it's just, the whole thing is so unnatural and stupid. Counterproductive.
All right, Andy. Listen, I've got you way off topic. Let me put you on hold for a minute. We'll come back and find out what you really called in about. This is Nova M. Stay with us. Back to Andy in Alaska. Andy in Alaska here very quickly because we're about out of time. Andy, go ahead. I took so much of your time. What you called in about what?
Oh, well, first of all, I wanted to say that, God, I wish I had a talk show like yours so I could just hang up on people like Neil. What a great liberty that is.
Yeah, it is.
And the other thing is, this winter, I made a new friend, older, sort of liberal-leaning cat, I guess. He got me to read the Audacity of Hope book that Obama wrote.
Uh-huh.
Boy, it was tough. Took me a while to get through it. He was really sweet as saccharine, you know what I mean?
Right.
I read pretty much the whole thing. I did skip the whole family values chapter. I could hack it.
Right.
But, I don't know. I felt like, okay, here's another ambitious ambitious politician in the world. Yes, I can agree with some of his things, blah, blah, blah. But right now, I was thinking about the lady who emailed you about, you know, Barack's position and
right.
How he could be assassinated and all this. And, you know, I guess what I think is that, first of all, we need somebody who's willing to take that chance right now.
Mm-hmm.
We need somebody. I mean, it's a lot to ask. It ain't me, even if I was, you know, had a chance. I don't think I would do it. I don't know, maybe. But that's what we need, I think, where the country's at. Like, I don't think we have room or time for, like, another Bill Clinton or somebody like that. We, you know, somebody who's kind of going to make us all feel good because he's at least articulate when he bullshits us.
Whoops. Oh, no. Andy, I know you listen on Sirius Satellite Radio, and if we were only on Sirius Satellite Radio, there are certain words that would be allowed, and that was one of them, but we're only on Sirius Satellite Radio by virtue of the fact that they carry the program. We originate as over-the-air broadcast. And I know it's weird that I can say the goddamn word or the son of a bitch word, and the word that you just said is not allowed. I don't understand it either. But those are the rules. And once a certain language is used, we have to suspend the call. And I hate it because I love getting your calls, Andy. So I'll tell you what. Call again whenever the spirit moves you. Just remember that particular word for nonsensical reasons. Just absolute garbage reasons. That word can't be used on over-the-air broadcast. And I hate that, especially due to the fact that I took all of Andy's time asking him about the salmon industry. Sorry, Andy. Call again. We love hearing from you, and so do the people who listen to this program. So check in again when the spirit moves you. Thanks to the crew tonight, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and our executive director, our executive producer, oh, my God, Catherine Bay. We got time for one more call. Let's try. Clifford is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Also, Clifford, welcome to the program.
Yes.
Hey.
I was just wanting to talk about the economy and...
Sure, go ahead.
And the gas prices and, you know, first one thing another. I live down here in North Carolina, Tennessee,
uh-huh.
North Carolina line.
Yeah.
And a lot of our furniture factories have left the country.
Right.
I guess, can I mention a furniture brand name?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I Broyhill Furniture.
Right.
I used to work for Broyhill Furniture for about almost 20 years.
They're not here anymore?
The one that plant that I worked at, they left and went to China.
Oh, my.
They was making furniture, you know.
Sure.
The case furniture.
I'm familiar
they left
with,
and went to China.
I'm familiar with the Broyhill brand. What are you doing now?
Oh, I get disability.
Oh,
I'm
see.
On Social Security, fixed
uh-huh.
income.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of makes it pretty tight, you know,
sure.
on Social Security and on fixed income.
Sure.
High as gas is, you know, $4 a gallon gas.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I just got a beef with the conservative Republicans, you know, overall.
Mm-hmm. I hear
and,
you.
And, I mean, my daddy, he fought in World War II. He was a veteran of World War II, Silver
mm-hmm.
Star, Bronze Star veteran,
mm-hmm.
Purple Heart, you know, he got
sure.
it all, combat
sure.
infantry badge. And he fought against the Nazis during World War II.
So you hate to see Nazis take over this country.
Oh yeah, it would have been people wouldn't have had the enjoyment of the benefits that they have today, even though we're still living under the conservatives, Republicans.
Well, I kind of meant the Nazis that operate out of the Bush administration, and I swear to God, Clifford, they are definitely Nazis. Clifford, we're just about out of time, so good to hear from you. I hope you call in again. We're going to have to leave it there, pal. Broyhill is gone. What's left?
We just ordered some furniture from North Carolina.
For Molly.
For Molly's bedroom.
Yeah.
Better check.
Better check and see. We were promised that it was made in America. We were promised that. So we'll find out.
That's what they said about my Chrysler.
Your Chrysler? Your minivan? It's not made in America? Of course it is.
Think only parts of it are assembled.
Well, the stuff that keeps breaking is not made in America. No, it probably is. Oh, well. We'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Thanks for hanging out with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Keep it lit. I'll see you tomorrow.